Hello, everyone. Coming up on today's episode of the Celtics Talk podcast, as always, I'll be joined by H-Rod Blakely and Chris Forsberg. We'll deep dive into the first two episodes of The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls documentary. We'll discuss that. Plus, we'll also hear from Danny Ainge and Wick Grosbeck about the upcoming NBA season. Will it return? Will we have to wait till next season? Might there actually be games without fans? All that and more coming up on this edition of the Celtics Talk podcast. All right, everyone, it is the Celtics Talk podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined by Chris Forsberg and H-Rod Blakely. And Sherrod, always got to try to one-up somebody, Forsberg. I got my guy Marcus Smart. I got my guy Jay Crowder. You know, I got him there. Sherrod, where'd you dust that thing off, man?
Listen, man, this is all about classics around here, okay? This is a classic. Gigi Datome, come on.
Dude, that,
never
that's like
forgotten.
One of one, right, Forsberg? That's one of one. Because I don't know anybody else with a Gigi jersey.
To be fair, Gigi was a Celtics Twitter legend. A lot of people wanted him and his beard and his ponytail back on future teams, but he made a lot of money and won a lot of championships overseas. They could have used a guy like Gigi on that roster.
Oh, great shooter, great personality, on a cheap contract, made more money.
Shutting it down.
No, because you know why? I think that the legend of Gigi was actually bigger than, you know, the reality. You know, we heard about his legendary shooting, but we never saw it, Sherrod. We never saw it in the game. He would be killing it in practice, killing it in warm-ups, but we never saw it in actual game
action. I'm saving my jersey for later. Now that's a classic
jersey right there. Yeah, we're going to get into this Jordan and Last Dance documentary coming up in just a little bit, guys. But it's been 6 weeks since the NBA suspended its season, and it doesn't look like, you know, there's any chance that it's coming back soon. We still don't know. Even Adam Silver said, you know what, we'll talk about it May 1st and, you know, find out more information. Wick Grosbeck and Danny Ainge talked about the possibility of this season resuming and what it would take, maybe even playing games without fans. Let's get them first, and then we'll react to it.
Okay, Wick, thanks again for joining us. Let's just get right to it. Are you under the assumption that the NBA will be resuming play at some point this year?
I'm hopeful, and we're on literally almost daily different committee calls and league-wide calls, and the tone or the substance of the meetings is always safety first, and that's not just a buzzword or a phrase. It's exactly how Adam and all the owners feel. Is we got to make sure it's safe. So that's going to mean testing and everything else and safety precautions. But when it's safe, we're going to go ahead. I'm not predicting when, but the idea is to try to do something once safety is assured. It's not safe now, so there's been no decisions.
Are you optimistic?
I am optimistic.
Why?
Because I think we've got time. We don't have to play according to the original schedule. We would have been in the playoffs right now. We would have had home games last weekend, I think it was. And we've got the futures in front of us. I mean, I'm working with, not with testing, but with a vaccine program and also backing a drug trial at MGH out of the charitable foundation. And, you know, I'm just optimistic in general as a person, but I'm optimistic that eventually we'll get to a place where it'll be safe to reopen society.
One of the scenarios, the most popular scenario, involves Vegas. Is that if and when it does happen, is that in all likelihood what it's going to be?
Well, it's a fair question. I, you know, as usual, it seems like whenever I come on, I'm like, well, the league won't let me speak about this or that or the other thing. The fact is that Adam has said we won't make any decisions under any circumstances until the next date would be May 1st. But it could be, who knows, June 1st or July 1st before a decision is made, either to go or no go. It has not been made now, and so it's not for me to speculate. I can imagine that we're more likely to come back. I mean, different cities in the country are affected differentially. They're different situations. And so if we're trying to come back as soon as we can, you'd probably put that into the balance of where we can play. But that decision hasn't been made, just to be honest. So don't know. I'm on the executive committee of the league, so when it's made, you know, I'll be in there pitching for it, but it hasn't been made yet.
You know, I think Adam has some tough decisions, but I trust him and what he's doing. And the Board of Governors, I think they're going to, you know, do what's best. But I'm holding out hope that we're still going to play some basketball this year. But that's just me being a fan. I don't really have any inside information on that.
What about playing in an empty gym?
Yeah, it's not as much fun. It's not ideal. But it beats it's better than not playing. Listen, I've gone to college games and high school gyms, and there's like 40 or 50 people in the building, and you know, it's still a good game. I've been involved in practices where there are zero fans in the room, and it is intense, and it is a battle. Matter of fact, there's many times I've said, like, I wish you guys would play as hard against our opponents as you play against one another. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's not ideal, but I think it could work.
All right, fellas, we just heard from Danny and Wick, and, you know, I echo sort of what Danny was saying, like the fan in me, I think it's going to return. But you also got to be a realist, right? And I have no idea what's going to happen with this season.
The thing is this, you know, the fan in all of us wants the games to come back, and they want to come back ASAP, but there's so many different factors that have to come into play, not only in terms of what the NBA is about, but you're talking about different states, different, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy to all of this that has to really fall into place before we can start seeing games, even games without fans. And I want to be optimistic because the fan of me wants to get those games back. I want to see Marcus Smart running up and down the court, drawing charges and doing all those type of things. But the practical person in me doesn't see it happening anytime soon.
And I'm the same way. Like, I want to be Mr. Optimistic. And every time I see one of these classic Celtics games and the playoff intensity and thinking about how the Garden would be roaring right now if we had actual basketball, I'm like, let's figure out how we got to have this happen. Like, I don't care. Okay, no fans, whatever. We just want basketball. And yet, I just think about, like, how hard it's going to be to get everybody to be able to be in the same proximity to just get this off the ground. I just don't know. And I think what's striking to me is, like, I love that they strike an optimistic tone, but then I think people get excited. And I know that's not on Wick Grosbeck to come out and be like, look, I'm optimistic, but don't just like jump to another level and assume this means that it's going to start soon. But I think people do hear that and they go, oh, you know, maybe basketball will come back. And then it's just more disappointing when it doesn't come to fruition. And so I'm trying to stay tempered. I mean, like, look, every school in Massachusetts is shutting down now. Like, I just don't know how they find a path back. Part of me sits here and watches the football offseason and the excitement at least being generated from there. And as much as I would hate, like, I hope they give this a chance to come back. But at some point, wouldn't you rather just jump in the free agency, give us something to be excited about? I mean, I know it would stink not to crown a champion, but I'd wonder if there's a way where if we just get to the point where we don't think basketball's coming back at all, let's figure out how we can breathe some excitement into sports in an off season.
Well, Chris, the thing about the basketball and NBA is that they can go into August and play, you know, and it may affect next season. And so here we are, you know, still in April. If you're talking about games in August, you're 3 months away. Who knows what we're going to look like 3 months from now? And I agree, you know, off-season, free agency, draft, that'll give us something to talk about. But the NBA is handling it properly. And, you know, there's no need to go out there and say, you know what, we're canceling the season now because you still have time. With that being said, it just depends on how you want to look at it. Do you want to be an optimist or a pessimist, you know? And you say tempered, you know, honestly, I could use some good news right now. I could use a glimmer of hope. I could use, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel. And I'm not trying to say the NBA should sell, you know, people the goods and be a carnival barker and, you know, things like that. But there's still no need to make a decision right now regarding the season.
100%. I'm on board with all of that. I just don't want to get tantalized by it and then have the rug pulled out from under me. So I'm trying to keep it in line.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all want to avoid being Charlie Brown on this. You know, really excited. And the next thing you know, we're flat on our backs like, oh, man, damn, what happened to the season? But to Drake's point, I do think that there needs to be a certain element of optimism out there because there's damn sure not a lot of it to go around. And you know what? I'm willing to roll the dice on the NBA because, again, to Drape's point, there's so much time between now and they can realistically have to start panicking about not having a season where there really is hope on the horizon. But again, like I said earlier, there's so many things that have to fall into place. But the good thing about it is that there's a clear window of time that I think the NBA can work with to potentially get that season back and finish this thing out and potentially look ahead to 2021.
Hey there, it's Tom Haverstraw, your NBC Sports National NBA Insider and host of the Haverstraw Podcast. With all the talk about Michael Jordan and NBCSN showcasing some Olympic classics, I talked to Warriors Hall of Famer, NBC Sports Bay Area analyst, and member of the 92 Dream Team, Chris Mullen. Mullen gives me his best Michael Jordan stories and all the memories of the Dream Team, and he reveals the craziest sports Zoom meeting of all time.
Jim Brown was on it, Jerry West, Oscar Robertson.
So download the Haverstraw wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let me ask you guys quickly here about, all right, so let's say the NBA does come back with no fans. What's the quality of basketball going to be like? We heard LeBron James, Chris, talk about, you know, he gets juiced from the fans, you know, the excitement. Paul Pierce has mentioned it also. Will the quality of the game suffer, you think, without fans there?
I think it has to. It is, I mean, look, we're all going to be just relieved to have some sort of diversion. I'm going to still tune in. I hope we're there. Like, I hope the media is allowed to be in the building and be part of this. And, you know, but even if we're not, you know, it's going to be just a relief to have sports back. And yet, you know, when I think about the playoffs and the TD Garden, it's that atmosphere. It's that, you know, people going nuts, the team getting a lift from that. And, okay, look, it would be a level playing field for everybody. You're not going to have the support when you're on the road or whatnot. But I do think it's going to just be a little jarring at first. Maybe we'll get used to it. I'll be fascinated to see how teams respond to runs. You know, all of a sudden, like a 10-2 run when there's no noise, do you even notice it? I mean, it'll be interesting to me to see how the players address it. But, you know, look, I think Danny said it in that call, right? Like, if it ultimately it's no basketball, because but you can play without fans, like, just give us something. Give us basketball.
Right.
I think that it's going to take a little bit of while to adjust, but I think there are going to be elements of a no fan is fanless basketball that are going to be positive. And the one thing, and both of you guys can hear me out on this. When you are playing pickup ball in the street and you've got good guys on the floor, really good players, they talk smack on a level that you just have never seen. I'm looking forward to seeing the Clippers play the Lakers with no fans. And Patrick, we can actually hear everything Patrick Beverley says, everything he says. When you think about and Marcus Smart, who I think is one of the world below the radar smack talkers, I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. I think there are going to be elements of a fanless game where you can literally hear everything on the court that I think is going to make it more entertaining, more enjoyable, and you're going to have to pass on some of those fines that they normally pass out for guys using not inappropriate language because, again, we're just happy to get guys on the court at that point. And if they're going to drop a couple 4 or 5-letter words, they probably shouldn't. We'll take that. That's what the beep button is for, right, Drapes?
Exactly. It would have to be on a 7-second delay, right? And you'd have to have somebody in the truck, you know, dropping out that audio. Can you imagine like KG or somebody, you know, back in the day where he was playing, you know, some of the trash talk. And you're right, Sherrod. Patrick Beverley would be right up there too. It actually might make it a little more interesting, too. You
exactly.
You see the true trash talkers out there.
Exactly.
What's been your favorite diversion during all this? Are you watching these classic games? I mean, again, I sit there and I get excited, but then I see the Garden rocking in 86 or 84 right. Or whatever, and I'm like, man, can you imagine if Jason Tatum was out there? Would he be the one making the leap? You know, I was writing something this week about the 2002 playoff series where they took down Iverson in round one. Pierce sort of makes that leap into the spotlight, and Antoine's wiggling. Like, I wonder, it's just so hard for me to, like, imagine what it would look like if they were out there. How are you distracting from the fact that we don't have basketball?
Well, the thing that I like with the classic games is you've realized that there were a lot of really good players that we don't remember all that well because, you know, they had a certain role during that time, and we just remember them for having that role, but they did so many other things. You know, when I think of M.L. Carr, you know, I think of him waving a towel, but right. M.L. Carr could ball. Yeah. He was actually a decent baller. And I look at Cedric Maxwell, who we know had a great run during that, you know, when he got NBA Finals MVP. But you look at what he did in other years, you know, in the playoffs. Max was a baller. Max was a legitimate baller. And you look at the year before Larry got there, he averaged almost 20 a game. So there's so many different guys like that that had roles that were important to winning that we just completely forgot about, that these classic games are reminding us of. And I think about guys on, you know, teams that we cover now. Like, for example, other than around here, who will remember James Posey other than us as a guy that helped you win a championship? But I think in 10, 15, 20 years ago, people will look back and say, oh, wow, he had a pretty important role. Whereas we know that now because we're in this era.
I was waiting for Drapes to pull a James Posey jersey over onto his background.
I wish. I should reach over into the closet over there and see what I have. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, this is forcing me to do, and not forcing me to do, but I feel like the writers, you guys and, you know, writers around the country, a lot of features, a lot of, you know, Q&As, you know, you're getting a lot of, you know, whether it's Draymond Green, whether it's, you know, other people talking about, you know, giving stories of yesteryear. You know, I read one Magic Johnson in a request to go to the Knicks, and, you know, just so much good content that's being put out there that you don't necessarily see on TV, but, you know, you guys are doing a tremendous job, I think, still telling stories and really diving deep into, you know, not the X's and O's, obviously, but the stories of some of these players. And that's helped me get through this process a little bit.
Well, everyone's around and available. Like, normally I'll text a player or something. They're like, well, I'm busy. I got this or that. It's like, man, you got nothing to do. Jump on a Zoom call. Give us some insight. It is remarkable. I wonder, I think it's just interesting to me. I think it'll change our business, you know, because the ability to get people and do these Zoom calls and everything, it's rather fascinating how it's shrunk the world a little bit and forced us all to reimagine how we communicate with each other. Maybe it'll make stories better moving forward because guys are just more accessible.
All right, let's get into what everybody's been talking about the last week or so, and that's the Last Dance documentary. It's about the final season for Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and those, oh yeah, there you go, Forrest Burke. How many Jordan jerseys do you got, man?
Like, I got them all, man.
You can't idolize Jordan growing up here in New England, bro. That's blasphemy.
Did you see the 90s Celtics? What was I supposed to idolize? Oh, my right, God.
That's true.
It's funny because, again, I wrote about this week. It'll be out hopefully around the time this podcast drops. But when I was a kid, you know, my earliest memories are Larry Bird sort of stretched out in front of the Boston bench because his back was so bad, you know, and those teams just not being as competitive as they could be. You know, the mid-90s and the unfortunate tragedy with Reggie Lewis. And then things just get kind of murky there for a few years. So I naturally gravitated to Jordan and the Bulls, not necessarily as a fan, but just a fan of Jordan. And now it's remarkable because, you know, I think as a kid, you just see all that he does, but you don't see the behind-the-scenes stuff. I think we're all just fascinated by this rare glimpse of a very sort of private person, even though as big of a spotlight as there was on Michael Jordan, to see, you know, sort of the just how driven he was, see how much grief he could give his GM, how much grief he could give his teammates. You know, it's a fascinating look at someone who, you know, I felt like we knew so much about and yet we probably knew so little.
Well, the thing about Michael is that a lot of the stuff that we're seeing, you know, it's been talked about before, but there wasn't flesh and bones put to those stories. You know, you hear about him getting on his teammates, and then you see him getting in Tony Kukoc's face, and you see him getting on Ron Harper's ass about not playing defense, things that we've heard about, but we haven't really actually physically seen that. And, you know, in this day and era where it's all about video, it's not about stories as much as it is the actual visual content that you can deliver. So to see that stuff literally play out, you know, him, you know, making jokes about Krause about, you know, being vertically challenged and being a little bit poor. That stuff is awesome stuff because, again, we've heard those stories, but to actually see them play out before our very eyes, that's what I think is really making this Last Dance resonate the way it has, you know, after the first couple episodes.
What's been your favorite part, Drapes?
Huh?
What's been your favorite part of the documentary so far, Drapes?
You know, my favorite part is just seeing, you know, how driven Jordan was, like Sherrod mentioned, how, you know, they mentioned during the documentary, really no days off, right? Like, he brought it every single night. He brought it every single practice. And you don't see that, you know, nowadays. Back then, I mean, guys just don't do that. But what struck me, and Sherrod mentioned it a little bit, the level of disrespect for Jerry Krause. Like, not behind the scenes. It was in his face. You know, they would clown Jerry Krause in his face. I cannot imagine that happening nowadays. You know, can you imagine a Celtics player doing that to Danny Ainge? You know, I don't know. What do you think about that? I just, whether it's Scotty yelling at him or Jordan, you know, picking with him, the level of disrespect that was shown back then. Wow.
Usually it's Danny busting the players' chops in this modern NBA. You know, he gives as much grief to his guys and needles them as much as possible. Now, they give it back a little bit. Terry Rozier liked to poke fun at him when he was here. And guys, you know, sort of learned that Danny's willing to roll with the punches. But with Krause, it definitely seemed like a little mean-spirited. And for all the grief he did get, you know, he did go out and get Scottie Pippen, right, and to help construct that roster and kept them afloat. He probably shouldn't have played hardball that last year and caused some unnecessary strife. But it is fascinating to just see it. I also love watching Jordan, like when they're over in Paris and the guy's asking for an autograph and Michael's like looking for security, like, get this clown out of here. Right. I love those moments because, like, again, he's very, very camera friendly, was the face of the league, but he didn't have time for that. He was there on a business trip, got his trophy. Then he walks into the locker room and says, make sure Jerry doesn't get this. I mean, just savage.
It's awesome. You know, the Celtics clearly played a big part in Jordan and who he was. And, you know, one thing that was mentioned and shown vividly in the documentary was that tremendous playoff game that Jordan had, really series, you know, game one, 49. Then he backs it up with game two, dropping 63 at the Garden in a loss, though. Danny Ainge recently spoke to us about that game two, where Jordan scored 63. And what they did the day before, they actually golfed together, and maybe Ainge is to blame for Jordan going off. Let's listen.
You guys had a couple days off in between. Is it true that you played some golf with Michael? And what was your relationship with Michael Jordan before this series?
Well, Michael, as you know, is one competitive son of a gun. And but I did. And I think this is the only time in my career that I ever even had dinner, lunch, did anything with an opponent throughout my whole career, especially in the playoffs. But with Michael loved golf and I loved golf. And he reached out and wanted to know where he could find a golf course and maybe get on a golf course to play in Boston on their two off days. So we think we arranged to play 36 at Framingham Country Club.
So what do you guys think? I mean, first of all, golfing before a playoff game, I mean, that's just that can't happen, right? You know, I can't see guys being chummy like that. You know, we would clown them for that. Nobody clowned them back then. But maybe Danny Ainge, you know what, pissed Jordan off enough that he went out there and dropped 63.
So here's twofold. First of all, Michael had lost game one while dropping 49. So that in itself was going to piss him off for game two. But then to go out there on the links, get your ass kicked by Danny, and Danny talking smack all that time. Danny, yeah. There's no question Danny was a big part of Jordan dropping 63, but that wasn't the only part. But he definitely added fuel to the fire without question.
Plot twist. What if Danny Ainge, with 36 holes of golf, wore Michael Jordan out and took out all of his competitive energy and prevented him from scoring like 70. I know it's absurd, but that game went into overtime, right? Maybe Jordan didn't have enough at the finish line. Like, what does it matter if Danny Ainge expends all that energy? As long as Bird and McHale and all those guys are upright and ready, Danny's just a mid player at that point. But I think the Celtics secretly sent him out there trying to work up Jordan, trying to take out his energy. I'm going to give Danny the benefit of the doubt. The one thing I do love is that he said that Michael came up to him afterwards and said, tell Dennis Johnson to be ready tomorrow, right, whatever. I wonder if Ainge ever relayed that message. Like, that's not, hey Deej, look, I might have made Jordan a little mad. You know, good luck out there.
What?
Exactly. You know, and, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, Jordan doing that, you know, in the mid-80s. Could he do it now? Like, Dennis Johnson was a damn good defender. I mean, Dennis Johnson could guard Magic Johnson and did a hell of a job during some of those 80 series. Is there anybody you think today that could actually slow Jordan down? Could Kawhi shut him down a little bit?
Well,
I take that as a no. I take that as a no.
No. You know, the funny thing is this, though. When I look back at Jordan's career, really there was only one guy that did a better-than-average job on Michael almost every time they played, and that was Reggie Lewis. And I look around the NBA, who are guys that have that 6'7", 6'9", long arm build? And, you know, as crazy as this sounds, I think the one guy that could potentially give Jordan, I wouldn't say shut him down, but I think he could make life very difficult for him, is Giannis Antetokounmpo, because of that ridiculous length that he has. And the fact that he will make Jordan work harder than anyone from the 80s at the other end of the floor as a defender because of that length, because of that athleticism. And again, I think that's the only thing that when I look back at guys who gave Michael, no one shut him down, but some certain guys gave him more trouble than others. Length, athleticism, those are the two things Giannis brings to the table. And I think those are the two things that would have made things a little bit more uncomfortable. It might have taken Jordan 35 shots to get his 40 points against Giannis.
It's hard to say that Marcus Smart, who guards seven-footers, would struggle with a guy only a couple inches taller than him. But I do agree, Jordan's quickness and just having that little bit of a height and his ability to create. I wonder if Marcus, someone who we think is probably one of the best defenders in the league, could shut him down. I love the suggestion of Reggie Lewis. I think people forget that four-block game that Reggie had against Jordan. Not that it did put it on the map, but you go out there and you block Michael Jordan four times in a game, it's like, whoa, that's crazy. Again, tough not to have known what Reggie would have developed into, and it would have been fun to see those two go at each other more. I don't know. I don't know if Giannis – it's hard to say Giannis couldn't stay in front of Michael with that length and that size, but, I mean, look, Michael was the king of getting to any spot he wanted to on the mid-range, getting to the basket and finishing tough. That's the other thing that stands out to me watching him on the court. I don't understand how he can hang in the air so long. I know he had these amazing leaps, right, but he, more than anyone, would go up and go under, and I'm like, oh, he's got no chance. And then he's still going up on the other side. When he hit his head on the backboard blocking the shot in college at North Carolina, I mean, just think about how absurd that was. The fact, and forget the whole thing about him going third in the draft. It's just outrageous.
Now, I don't want to be a Jordan hater. You know, I don't, but you look at the era, especially the 80s, athleticism wasn't as prevalent as it is now. Now everybody's an athlete, right? You know, you mentioned Giannis, you got seven footers, Durant. I mean, you got guys that can, you know, length and athleticism. That's the name of the game. It wasn't so much the case back in the 80s. In the 90s, it started to get there. But, you know, it's a different ball game now, man. It's Jordan would still be great, but I think there'd be so many other greats out there too.
Well, the thing that I point to is that back then, and you're right, there weren't as many athletes out there, but guys could play with a higher level of physicality. And yet, even with that higher level of physicality, he still got buckets. He still became a relatively efficient. In this day and age where you can't touch a guy, I mean, you have legitimate elite defenders. When they go up against a guy defending them, they put their hands behind their back. Can you imagine defending Michael Jordan with your hands behind your back? What's going to happen? He's going to torch you. Michael Jordan would be a 40-point-per-game scorer in this NBA.
But
there's no doubt about it.
And let's not forget, there's zone defense allowed now, you know? And so you could help out a little more than you could before. I'm watching some of those you know, old highlights, Jordan scoring 63, going between his legs against Larry Bird. You don't think guys would run a double team at Michael Jordan, make Luke Longley beat him, or make, you know, Bill Cartwright beat him or something like that? I don't know, man.
There was an awful lot of doughy white centers in the league as we're watching these classic games. And I do think of like, oh, these were the rim protectors. Right. But I go back to the physicality of it. I mean, Michael was getting clubbed, like taking those mid-range jumpers. The one thing I'd be curious to see is if a more modern Michael Jordan, how good could he have been beyond the three-point arc? He certainly had that shot, but if it would have been even more of a weapon, and how much could they have utilized his athleticism to spring him and get him open? And, you know, would you even want that? He was so good at that mid-range that, you know, you don't want to take that away from him and getting to the basket. But It would be fascinating to time shift these guys. Like even Larry Bird, we regard him as such an elite 3-point shooter. And then we were watching one of those series, and it was like game seven of a playoff series before he hit the first 3-pointer of the damn series. And it's like, it's just a totally different game. And so I think it's hard to judge cross era. I mean, I was talking to Danny Angie the other day. He said it's hard to compare 2008 to 2020 based on the way the style has changed already. Imagine going from the 80s where, you know, they didn't grow up with a 3-point line. It was just, you know, part of what the evolution. So I would love to know if we could put modern Michael Jordan. My guess, he would still dominate everybody because, if nothing else, because of that relentless work ethic and desire.
You know, it's I was thinking when we talked about who could slow down Michael Jordan, maybe the only guy that probably had a great chance was his teammate, Scottie Pippen. Mm. You know, Scottie could guard all five positions. He was long, he was quick, he was athletic. And, you know, we're going to get into next week about, you know, the NBA's best duos, but one thing that, you know, the first two episodes of the documentary, The Last Dance, showed me and reminded me, Scottie Pippen was a hell of a player, man. Maybe a guy that doesn't get enough credit.
Well, he's never going to get enough credit because he's playing with Michael Jordan. Right. When he finally broke free from the shadow of Michael Jordan and was just kind of, you know, had an opportunity to frankly, rewrite his own legacy, it wasn't as good. So Pippen, I thought, was maybe one of, if not the greatest sidekick in NBA history. When you look at what he could do individually and you look at what his talents were able to do and accentuate in Jordan's game. I mean, Jordan was going to be a great player regardless of who he's with. But Pippen, I thought, allowed him to be exceptional at being an exceptional player. Because Pippen could hold his own. Pippen could dominate games for like a good quarter and a half or a half. And Michael could still go out there, still put up his numbers and win decisively. I thought they were, with question to me, they're the greatest duo of him in all NBA history.
I still love that the graphic about him being the 122nd highest paid player in the league and how improbable that seems. And I love even more that his wife came out after the documentary aired and flexed and said, "Don't worry about us. We've got enough money." Like as if people were running out to do a GoFundMe for Scottie Pippen. But I mean, he really was an amazing sidekick. Every great athlete, as good as they are, needs someone like that. Nice that Scottie gets a little bit of the spotlight here. The other thing that was jarring to me, his voice changes. He's got that super bassy voice in modern era, and we even hear it now as a broadcaster. But when he got drafted, he wasn't as – like, where did that come from? I need to know the story of Scottie Pippen's voice getting super bassy. For money, you know?
Right. That should be its own little episode, like, you know, Scottie Pippen's transformation. No, great stuff, guys. Anything else you guys want to add or get to, man? It's just I'm happy to be talking with you guys and at least talking, you know, basketball and some of the classic Celtics in The Last Dance.
Are you worried that Jason Tatum?
You,
ooh, go for it, Sharad.
I got one for you.
What do you got?
We should have a Celtics quarantine question throw out there. Let me ask you this. All these knuckleheads are out here doing TikTok and all this other stuff. Who's the one Celtic you'd want to be in a TikTok video with?
Marcus Smart. You know?
Damn it.
I took your guy, right? My guy, Marcus Smart over there. I would love to be. I mean, because we know he could dance. He's funny as hell. He's okay with putting himself out there. He does trick shots. He's so creative. So give me Marcus Smart.
Good one. Forsberg.
Oh, man, you're going to put me on the spot. I'm not saying Cantor because Cantor's TikToks are terrible. I can't even stand up for my own guy here. He needs to learn how to dance or go viral. So I would abstain highly from TikTok until this quarantine when my kids have just beaten me down. And now yesterday we were out for a walk and my kid's doing the steps challenge where you shuffle your way up the stairs. And yeah, I'd have to go with someone who can dance. I don't know, maybe Jaylen. You know, Marcus Smart is just so good in so many eras. He could have the most diverse of the TikToks. I'll tell you what, you know, the one that would go most viral, Brad Stevens. Can you imagine getting Brad dancing around? People would be subscribing left and right.
I'm going to go with the TikTok man himself, Taco. Everything he does goes viral. Everything he touches, it just gets amplified. And he's funny. He's smart. And again, everything he does goes viral. And who doesn't love Taco Fall?
I know. You could do anything with Taco, right? It's just Taco walking down the street. That'll go viral. I mean, that dude is exactly. Money. No doubt about it.
Drake, you got a hoop?
Yeah, I got two outside. Can you get full court going, bro?
Can you give one to Jason Tatum?
Hey, how come somebody on the Celtics didn't do what Jimmy Butler did? Jimmy Butler went out and bought hoops for everybody on the squad. Who got Skrilla like that? Who got cash like that? Gordon Hayward?
Who doesn't have that? That's the question.
They are NBA players. You're right. Everybody should be able to buy a hoop.
Shout out to Danny Ainge today roasting Jason Tatum by filming his own social media video outside saying we got player development going on every day. A little message to Jason. Next thing you know, Jason's out there on Amazon ordering a hoop. Good to see him get that. He did have like a little bouncy house one in his backyard for Deuce. Yeah. So he was getting some shots out, but hopefully now they got the 10-foot version. Hope they don't have the Trae Young 8.5-foot version that he was playing horse on. Like, hopefully we got Jason a full size. Keep those skills sharp so that if the season does come back, he can put them to good use.
If you're working on the same rim as Deuce, that's a problem.
I know. Well, the problem is, you guys know, you order these hoops, but then you actually got to put them together. You see Jason Tatum out there putting it together. Come on, man. I don't see it happening.
You can find people who can put that together for you, Jason. And if you need one, I got you.
You come over, I'm sure.
Steph Curry said it took him 5 hours to put together a hoop. Come on, people. Like, I don't know what there's got to be a Craigslist out there for people building hoops and stuff like that. I got someone to build a swing set in my backyard because I was too lazy to do it. You can find someone to put up a basketball hoop for you.
Exactly. Easily. All right, fellas, let's wrap it up. That'll do it for the Celtics Talk podcast. Some great stuff. Good stuff from Danny and Wick, as always. We will be back next week. I'm sure we'll be talking more about The Last Dance, and we'll see if the NBA has made any decisions about this current season. Rachel Rob Blakely and Chris Forsberg, I will see you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.
Me and Gigi are out.